Thomas Laird is our guest here on The Paula Gordon Show. He has written a book that sort of has its own personality called The Story of Tibet, Conversations with the Dalai Lama. I don't want to get too far from the politics, and I don't want to end there by all means, but this notion that we're sort of simple-minded about Tibet in the Western world in particular, and I would say especially young Americans who say, oh, well, free Tibet, you could put that on your bumper sticker. These questions touch the entire world as China becomes a singular major player.
Yes.
It particularly as you put forth the ideas of Tibet and Tibetans as a minority within a larger country where aggrieved nationalism has in the last 100 years shaped much that we'll be dealing with for centuries.
Yes.
How is it that we can be so simple-minded?
Well, you cannot. Our peace or war with China in the coming 20 years in our lifetime will depend on the decisions we make in our relations with China.
We, the United States.
The risk of war with China is real. I don't want to underestimate it. At the same time, I didn't come here to beat the drum. I don't want to exaggerate it. It could be avoided by proper choices by this country and by China. We can't control what choices they're going to make, but by our choices. The question is, will our foreign policymakers approach China with a strong enough appreciation of the history of China to be able to make informed choices that are not knee-jerk, that are not reactionary?
Well, especially having wiped out all the China experts in the 1950s. Well, the State Department was just gutted of anybody who knew anything.
And excuse me, now this is very interesting because, remember, I've told you that my view of China comes from Owen Lattimore. And Owen Lattimore and this entire school of the whole viewing Asia as the nomads versus the farmers, that entire school was exterminated in the State Department. They were all claimed to be communists because Chiang Kai-shek didn't like their politics. Chiang Kai-shek feared the Owen Lattimoreans, the Lattimorean view of history, because it said that the people of Inner Asia were not Chinese. And he wanted to hold on to Inner Asia as much as the communists did. And so that whole thread of conversation in American intellectual life has been exterminated. And that's part of what I think this book tries to do, is bring back the Lattimorean view of this, because we need it as we approach our relation with China in the coming 20 years.
The world needs it.
Yes. I took a course in East Asian economic development in the late 60s in college.
And Stanford should know some things.
And I did it, and I think they offered it because it was a backdoor way to begin to start teaching about China. Even at that point, there were very few China experts. It was still, in many ways, closed, or at least we thought it was closed to Americans, to Westerners. The ignorance of academia, much less the political leadership,
much less the rest of us,
was very dangerous. And we continue to have a fairly aggressive know-nothing policy.
Yes.
With respect to China. We're still dealing in stereotypes.
We can't. It's very hard for American government to understand China's motivations. So, for example, in the recent news now, I don't know whether you noticed, but China just conducted a ballistic missile test where they shot down a satellite. So they've done a satellite killer test. They're the third nation on Earth to ever achieve that. That means that the entire American military strategic advantage over China, which is entirely based on satellite space-based advantages like telecom, intelligence, weather, guidance, GPS, smart munitions, you name it, everything that we use, you know, to be able to stand. Remember, China has the largest standing army in the world. So our strategic advantage over them is space-based. Now, suddenly what China has done is stand up and said, the king has no clothes.
Bye-bye, strategic advantage.
It's an amazing transforming moment. And as we approach it, for me, one of the things that I'm amazed is that the history of Tibet, what if you understand the history of Tibet during the last millennia, which you'll have a snapshot vision of that. Yes, you will, if you read this book. And if you have that snapshot vision of this, then as you look forward into the future, it gives you a much more nuanced view of China's motivations and what China, for example, might do with that ability to shoot down American intelligence satellites.
Or any other satellites.
Or any other satellites. And because remember, when China got the ability to defend itself from the nomads, it used it aggressively. And so China is now in a position where it has 10% economic growth a year. To do that, it's run out of oil. There is no more oil in China. To grow now, they must import oil. Well, so now let's turn for a moment to Sudan. 3% of China's oil is now being exported from Sudan. And that's 80 or 90% of all the oil from Sudan is being sucked into the Chinese machine now so that they can continue their economic growth. And yet, what government do we have in Sudan? Well, a genocidal regime. So let's see. China's exporting genocidal values, the ones that they first fine-tuned in Tibet. So if Tibetan history is the canary in the coal mine, and it died in 1950, and none of us paid any attention, then here we are 50 years later, and what's happening? It's a very interesting... I mean, you cannot understand China's actions in the modern world if you don't understand China's history with Tibet. So this book isn't exotic, remote. This is the headlines today. It's very important to understand.
Well, and people forget. I forget sometimes. Again, I have to go back to that map. That China just slams up against the Middle East. That they have a substantial Muslim population, mm-hmm. which is a challenge. They have a substantial Buddhist population, which is a challenge. They have...
They're frightened of those minorities.
Ethnic diversity all through, but
many of them non-Chinese.
But when you get to far western China, you're in the Middle East.
Xinjiang, yeah. The Uyghurs are Turks. And they're Europeans.
Right. And that alone, given our adventures in the Middle East, our American adventures in the Middle East, suggests that we're probably backing into some things, again, out of ignorance
yes.
and inattentive. Now, we got into the Middle East on the basis of ignorance and inattentiveness.
And lies.
And a failure to read history.
Yeah. We must understand Chinese nationalism, the power of nationalism in China. Forget about communism. That's not even interesting anymore. That's just not even... Just forget it. The story is now, what is a powerful, successful nationalist state going to do with its abilities in the world? And what you see with the Communist Party is that they can only maintain their power by extending the economic growth. So they're doing anything to let that economic growth continue. And when you look at the history of what Chinese emperors have done with Tibet and other nations during the last 1,000 years, and you see how this plays into modern times. It gives you, I mean, as Winston Churchill said, the further backwards you can see, the further forward you are likely to be able to see.
Thomas Laird, quoting Winston Churchill. We'll all be back in a moment when Bill Russell will continue for a couple of more minutes on The Paula Gordon Show.